of Computer Professionals for CPSR, and I'm delighted to see you all here today. I'm very pleased that we've had an opportunity to have this conference at a critical moment in the Internet's governance structure and the birth and development of it. Before I introduce Mr. Nader, I'd like first of all to thank some pretty remarkable people who have managed to put this on today. I'd like to thank Ximena LaRue, Rick Berry and Paul Hyland, and Harish Bhatt for their wonderful help with filming, taking notes, making sure the registration table was covered. But most of all, I'd like to thank Hans Klein, the chairman of Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility, who has put in a tremendous number of hours with a number of other people in putting together this program, making sure that it was balanced, making sure that all interests would be represented here. And I think bringing together a very special group of people at a very special time and letting media and so forth cover it so that perhaps this word and an understanding of the ICANN and the Internet governance situation will go beyond the very small group that seems to be aware of it at this point. And now I have the distinct honor of introducing Mr. Ralph Nader. I think we are all very, very glad to be in America during his watch. We are all safer and healthier because he came on the scene some 30 years ago. And I think we're, as a group, particularly lucky as an Internet community that he has chosen this issue to get involved in. Throughout the years, we can always look to Mr. Nader's accomplishments and his fights as ones that are filled with integrity and common sense, and presenting us with a picture and an understanding of the situation that we can all understand and relate to. So I know you've all waited for this moment, and I won't take up any more of your time. Thank you for coming and joining us.
Thank you, Ms. Wick, and ladies and gentlemen. The expansion of the global Internet raises many questions, and of course the ones that we're concerned with today deals with the governance of a part of the global Internet and attempts to foresee what the challenges and the needs will be in the future here in this country and around the world. So it's very important to get it right at this. And I'd like to indicate what happens when you don't get it right with other nonprofit institutions very briefly in the 20th century. When the mutual insurance companies were established, they were considered fundamentally democratic. If you bought a policy from Prudential or Metropolitan Life, you had a vote, and you could vote to elect the board of directors and participate in the governance of these companies. Well, they didn't get it right in the founding framework of accountability, and it didn't take long before management, centralized power, the policyholders were so stripped of any role that many of them didn't even know they had a role. And in recent years, the management has decided to convert many of these large mutual insurance policies, which are legally owned by the policyholders, not the stockholders, there are no stockholders, into stock-held corporations, severely depreciating the asset value of the policyholders, and indeed doing it without much information and consent. The same operated with the IMF. The IMF, an International Monetary Fund, was established to deal with currency fluctuations, and we now know that it has gone way beyond that original inspiration to a point where it's conditioning all kinds of policies in other countries as a criteria for its assistance. The Educational Testing Service in Princeton, New Jersey, started out as an innocuous nonprofit 501c3, and it was just going to develop tests and sell them because it persuaded admissions officials of universities to use the test scores as one of the criteria for admission by millions of students. Well, they didn't get it right at the founding either. It was an exceptionally secretive institution, that defined intelligence and was hubristically ridden enough to assign numbers to human intelligence, and it was enforced not by the beneficiaries, but by the admission officials of universities and the college board. And so millions of students had numbers assigned to their aptitude levels, ignoring the multiple intelligences of human beings, and cubbyholing the arena of human intelligence into a narrow sinecure that was defined by how you did some October or April morning for 3 hours answering questions A, B, C, D, none of the above. And so millions of students had their own internal self-worth defined and their horizon defined by these scores as they went through their undergraduate, graduate, and licensing professions and trades career. We see this occurring also in scientific and engineering membership associations, where they didn't get it right at the beginning, and the power was extremely centralized, even in the American Bar Association. Can you imagine? There's 200,000-300,000 attorneys who belong to the American Bar Association, perhaps more now. They cannot vote directly for their governing bodies. They cannot vote directly for the president of the ABA. They vote for a board of delegates, which in turn elects the president and vice president, etc., of the American Bar Association. So the concept of democratic governance, which everybody adheres to theoretically in the case of ICANN, I've yet to find someone who argues for autocratic governance. The concept of democratic governance requires a very thorough deliberative process, a process that I think should involve very thorough congressional hearings, very thorough executive branch hearings that would affirmatively go out to the country and inform people about this looming system of governance and provide all kinds of alternatives to its variety, to its functions, as befits a founding constituency's deliberative process. There are many people who are extremely skilled in computer technology who don't have the foggiest idea of what's happening now with ICANN, NSI, Department of Commerce, etc. Indeed, the proposals I'm going to put forward just for discussion in a few minutes are premised on accepting provisionally the framework of delegation. So that doesn't mean that I think that framework of delegation by the executive branch of the U.S. government was legal. I don't think that that has been authoritatively decided yet. And it doesn't mean that I don't think that this should be a transnational governmental responsibility directly without it being delegated to a nonprofit institution. ICANN was created through a memorandum of understanding, which very few people understand, between the Department of Commerce and ICANN. It resulted from a presidential directive that was first vetted in a green paper with the Department of Commerce going through the steps of ordinary rulemaking. But the regulatory procedure was dropped through, though, and instead of going through the publishing of final rules, the Department of Commerce just published a white paper and entered into a memorandum of understanding, which is contractually conceived as a contract, with ICANN, the designated new nonprofit company to handle Internet administration. Part of this is really a personal reflection of the transmigration of one Ira Magaziner from a person who once believed in public policy to a person who became an adherent of laissez-faire. And I suppose his experience in the healthcare fiasco in 1993 probably helped that intellectual mutation that seems to be set in severe concrete these days. we see this syndrome among many people who once called themselves liberals. The white paper set out four guiding principles for this new company, which are: one, to promote competition; two, provide for stability of the internet; three, bottom-up procedures; and four, representation. ICANN is given the task of making policies to manage the domain name system, allocation of address space, the assignment protocol parameters, and the management of the root server system. Very basic. What will be the structure and powers of this new regime? The problem is there's no boundary on these functions. And we know from history that when functions are given no boundaries, the powers that be tend to expand them to the benefit of powers that be. And the penumbra becomes far more significant than the initial definition of functions, just like the penumbra of mutual insurance companies, the penumbra of the IMF, the penumbra of the educational testing service, and so forth. For example, making policy decisions about the domain name system involves questions of trademark, copyright, property, privacy, etc. There's no executive treaty that created this entity. No act of Congress created this entity. This is a remarkable delegation of authority by our two branches of government. But it's all part of a historic trend of delegating more and more governmental functions to private entities. We have privatized jails now. We have privatized fire departments now at the local level. We may have privatized national defense. We have a good deal of that already in terms of Pentagon privatized contracting. And it raises a very important political philosophical question as to where the authority came for delegating so much public asset control and public authority to private entities. During the international trade agreements of GATT and NAFTA, one of the quieter coup d'etats in American history, our government delegated to secret tribunals in Geneva under the World Trade Organization the right to decide disputes close to the public press, no public transcript, between nations, some of which will be accusing other nations of putting consumer, environmental, and workplace standards above the imperatives of international trade, thereby restricting international trade, thereby violating international trade rules of the World Trade Organization, thereby being required to roll back these consumer environmental standards, such as the dolphin protection law, the air pollution laws, food labeling laws, etc. So if we could have witnessed this kind of dramatic delegation from the local, state, and federal governments to the World Trade Organization in an agreement that is now federal law, with barely a whimper by the press, which thought it was all about free trade instead of governance, you can imagine the difficulty in trying to get public attention to the governance of the internet or internets and the ICANN and NSI, Department of Commerce, triad. ICANN has procedural problems. Lack of openness is one. Their bylaws provide for transparency, if they say so, to the extent feasible. Lack of accountability procedures, lack of membership at the moment, and an unelected interim board making policy decisions that precede them. And a grievance procedure that gives mainly commercial interests a role in selecting arbiters of disputes, but the members have no say in who becomes the judges and what laws apply. All these are difficult questions procedurally, but they affect the substantive problems. ICANN has an accreditation policy with would-be registrars about the terms that they and the registrants must agree to, but that is clearly a contract of adhesion, worse than shrink wrap contracts, because if you don't want to play by their rules, there's no alternative market. The shrink wrap contract is a unique contract where you only see what you're obligated to be responsible for after you buy the product. and break it open. That's New Frontier contracts of adhesion. You need to be accredited to give out domain names and to have access to the root server system. The question is whether this is an antitrust violation of some sort. ICANN, once it gets the root server away from the monopolist network solutions, which is another example of what happens when you give away taxpayer assets and the public is unaware, ICANN has a monopoly power and you can only have access if you agree to their terms. For an entity that is supposed to promote competition, they have some fairly uniform requirements and no alternatives to them. Inherent in domain name policy decisions is a question of speech versus property. Just as in WIPO, where property rights are valued over speech rights, there's a similar tilt to ICANN. It is inherent in the structure of the DNSO, where 6 out of 7 constituencies are commercial. Administrating a domain name system allows the manager to connect authorized use with an individual. So the manager can determine what you can and cannot do with your name site and even revoke your site if they don't like what you're doing with it. We need some sort of Bill of Rights to combat this. Now, of course, nobody in ICANN will say that they're ever going to consider this kind of power, but they're only going to be there for a while. And there'll be successors, and there'll be penumbras, and power concentration will have its way without systems of accountability and openness and revision. They're only the vaguest boundaries defined, and they're not accountable to any government as it will play out. Even though their articles and bylaws say one thing, what prohibits them from changing those articles and bylaws once they're underway and they're, so to speak, free and clear from the temporary restraints of the Department of Commerce? If you don't like the decisions ICANN makes, where do you go? The Attorney General of California. This might be a bit upsetting to some people who are not American citizens. In my opinion, there will have to be some sort of act of Congress or treaty created to vest this entity with legitimacy and authority, or there will have to be litigation to put some boundaries on what it can do. Now, down in Santiago, which is, of course, an obvious place for an ICANN meeting, Mike Roberts, who's the interim president of ICANN, was overheard saying something in the corridor. And what he said was, the real work will be done at night. And that the only real question was, how far to go on membership? Now, given how fast certain decisions were made in one morning in the open meeting, it's quite clear that a lot of the real work was done at night or done in private. The important point here is that the framework will transcend whomever personalities are now running ICANN. And we have to make that very clearly distinctive. The estimable Esther Dyson is not ICANN. She's there for a short period of time. We have to look at the structure, not the people who are in the interim transition period. We have to learn from history that concentrated power will always have its way unless it's deconcentrated by rigorous structural accountability and by an ever-present vigilant constituency of members, people who use the internet. It's amazing how the patterns of power have persisted throughout history. That's why some of the wisest sayings are 2,000 years old. Because it's the same old story, again and again and again. If you read Aristotle, read Plato, you read the Roman thinkers of yesteryear. But I think Cicero gave us the best single definition for deliberating ICANN. And here's the definition. Libertarians heed this statement. It is, quote, freedom is participation in power. End quote. Freedom is participation in power. And that's got to be the guiding light. And we hope that equation results in justice, with all that means for internet participation, utilization, and potential for human well-being. We have to be very careful here that we keep the big objective in mind and we don't get too mired in details and mechanisms. We have to pay attention to detail and mechanisms, but if we don't have the objective of what is this all for, humanity in the world, enlightenment, health, safety, opportunity, preservation of resources, respect for future generations, helping to eliminate major problems of disease and poverty, war. That's what communication is supposed to help do, because it brings with it the best out of people. That's what democracy is. Democracy brings the best out of people. That's why it's so functionally superior, whether in war or peace, to other dictatorial authoritarian systems. And we always have to keep the goal in mind. And I see this problem that computer technology shows, where you have increasingly intense concentration on more and more minute technical options and developments. And you see thousands of techno twits talking jargon with one another, almost developing a new language of acronyms. And you just sit around looking at all this and these huge trade shows, and you say, what is this all for? Is it helping people think better, write better, communicate better, raise their horizons, develop civic opportunities and responsibilities, and solve the problems of the world? Or is it just another software upgrade going nowhere? So we always have to keep that in mind. And let me just make a few proposals. Now this, again, is a framework for ICANN and DNS management. This doesn't mean we don't go back to the drawing board. Doesn't mean we don't have thorough public hearings and deliberation to bring in a much more informed and numerically greater public. It doesn't mean that this shouldn't be an international governmental, directly governmental responsibility. So let's just look at it as a framework for ICANN and DNS management, and comments are welcome. ICANN's authority should be based upon a multilateral government charter. That charter should define and limit ICANN's authority. The U.S. is a dominant player, but we know that there are going to be a lot of people outside the U.S. governments who are going to say, what gives here? And they'll be saying it more insistently in the future. Second, the charter should be based upon a limited purpose, sui generis agreement among countries that express interest in working together, and that agree that ICANN's role should be limited to tasks essential to maintaining an efficient and reliable DNS management, and that ICANN will not be used as an instrument to promote policies relating to conduct or content on the internet. Additional multilateral institutions may be desired, but ICANN should not be created as a foundation for a vast internet governance institution that evolves step by step, month by month, year by year. In Esther Dyson's June 15 letter to us, we have this nice little sentence that punctuates my point. Therefore, ICANN does not aspire to address any internet governance issues. In effect, it governs the plumbing, not the people. It has a very limited mandate to administer certain largely technical aspects of the internet infrastructure in general, and the domain name system in particular, end quote. Now, this should call for explicit boundaries rather than no boundaries or very vague boundaries that can be stretched like an elastic band. 3, ICANN should not use its power over domain registration policy to exclude persons from the use of a domain on issues that are not germane to managing the DNS system of mapping IP addresses into domain names. The right to have a domain on the internet should be considered the same as the right to have a street address, a telephone number, or a person's name. 4, ICANN should identify a membership and elect its board of directors from its membership directly before it makes additional policy decisions in those areas appropriate for action by ICANN, those narrow areas. One aspect of direct voting is it's an educational device. It generates a debate. If millions of people can vote, then with the superb communication system known as the internet, there's no problem reaching them. It's not like you have to get postage and find the money for all that. So it could generate a great and very continually informed debate. 5, membership should be open to anyone who uses the internet. There should be no fee associated with membership or voting rights. 6, the records of ICANN should be open to the public, and the public should have the rights to documents as those rights are provided in our U.S. Freedom of Information Act, the rights to documents. The same would hold true for Advisory Committee Act. If there's a government advisory committee to ICANN, and it meets in Santiago, Chile, the real hub of the internet discussion in the world, it should be open to the public. And the Australian delegate was heard to say, quote, in Chile, was heard to say, quote, openness is not negotiable, end of quote. Amazing what you pick up over the transcripts here. It reflects a mindset, see? Openness for this government advisory committee, which is not dealing with matters of intense national security, is not negotiable. 7, the meetings of ICANN should be open to the public. And 8, the public should be given an annual opportunity to review and comment on the ICANN budget. When I say the meetings of ICANN should be open to the public, not just the general plenary meeting, all the sub-plenary meetings. 9, the budget of ICANN should be subject to review by the countries that provide the ICANN charter. Fees associated with domain registration should only be spent on activities essential to the management of the DNS system. 10, national governments should be permitted to exercise discretion over policies relating to the use of country top-level domains, like France, UK, US, etc. 11, for generic top-level domains, .com, .org, .net, and the new GTLDs, the domain space should be declared a public resource. The registrar or registries will perform services on behalf of the users of the domains. They will not own the domain space. It should be possible to replace firms engaged in registration services and DNS management without risking the stability of the internet. 12, on matters of public interest, such as policies regarding the use of trademarks or privacy of domain registration information, ICANN should make recommendations to the sui generis multinational body created to manage ICANN, and the multinational body should accept, reject, or modify the recommendations after giving the public a fully adequate opportunity to review and comment on the proposals. And finally, 13, on the issue of trademarks, the charter should explicitly protect the public's right to parody, criticism, and free speech. For example, domain names like gmsucks.com, one of my favorites, would not be confused with gm.com, and it would not be confused with gm.com unless GM was a certified masochist. And that name should be permitted. And we know that there are corporate interests who would like to dominate ICANN and dominate everything. That's the trajectory of corporate power, is to try to dominate everything. They have a zero-sum relationship with their Democratic opponents, that they want to stop this. And this is one of the few ways where consumer complaints are aggregated by company name, and people are able to have a small electronic community to plan joint action and learn about their particular product or service deficiencies. So let me end on this note, and that is that, excuse me, we're in at the founding now. And years hence, people are going to look back, and they're going to ask what kind of wisdom we were able to assemble, what kind of foresight, what kind of systems to foresee and forestall, to anticipate. We have the benefit of historical derelictions in other delegations of government authority to nonprofit groups. And remember, all corporations are created by delegated authority of the state and federal governments. They're all chartered, mostly by state governments. We've also had the historical failures of abusive government bureaucracy. But it's interesting to know that principles of accountability, openness, participation, review, democratic principles apply to both kinds of institutions. They apply to the corporate type of institution, nonprofit. They apply to the government institutions who delegate direct power to them. And of course, most nonprofit institutions don't get anything delegated to them except their charter. But ICANN is being delegated some pretty awesome potential power that it will be under the influence of its corporate constituencies, be under great pressure in future years to make not potential, but real. And what's at stake is the principal democratic communications technology for the next century. Big stakes. Big need for deliberation in many forms. Thank you.
My name is Eric Mingham with the United States Small Business Administration. I had a question about one of your points in the proposal to ICANN regarding that the domain names would be public interest, would be held in public interest. What sort of right would the end user, the domain name registrant, have in the name? If it's a public interest and a public resource, would they have any rights, or would that domain name potentially be reassigned as a phone number to that name?
Well, that's exactly the kind of detail that has to be thought out. Obviously, they can't be totally in control, and they can't be totally not in control. Right now, we're not at that level of detail. That's the problem.
Hello, I'm Carl Arbeck, and I just have a question of clarification. You brought up the point of membership voting for the directors of ICANN. Do you mean direct elections as in directly voting for a member, or direct, or voting for an intermediary body, which in turn votes for the directors?
I thought I made it clear. It's direct voting. For unions, for example, are two kinds of unions. In one union, the members vote for the president, et cetera, directly, like 2 million workers have a day when they vote. Other unions allow their members to vote for for delegates, who then meet in the convention and elect the president. What I'm suggesting is there should be direct election by potentially millions of people, and it could be broken up jurisdictionally and geographically and all, but there'd be direct election, and that will allow derivative actions, where if you have indirect elections, two-tier elections, you sidestep California law that provides for derivative actions in case of injustices by the members against the membership institution. Just direct.
Thank you.
Ms. Lane, my name is Nick Patience. I'm a journalist with a company called Computer Light. After you get the comments back on the framework, what are you supposed to do?
Well, what we're proposing to do is to broaden the arc of awareness of these issues. That's how primitive the situation is at the present time. Get more people involved, contacting our website and other websites, Professor Clemson's website, and then see what kind of consensus can come forward in a declaration of accountability principles. I don't know how it's going to break out. I know that I don't believe in this kind of delegation. I think this is should be a multinational governmental body where existing freedom of information laws and advisory committee laws, et cetera, are extended, and there's a dispute resolution system that is not formally cut from the arbitration legacy, because that has problems in terms of who chooses the judges, et cetera. So I don't know how it's going to come out in terms of any broad consensus. I do know there should be more and more participation in Los Angeles and other future meetings, broaden it out. And when the contract is up in September 2000, that's an opportunity to change the terms of understanding.
Contract with?
DOC, the Department of Commerce. And then we'll try to persuade Congress to have more thorough hearings. We're just at the public deliberation stages. You know, there is good experience, but nobody knows all the answers. There is experience of things that work, things that don't work, how to avoid concentration of power. We have a real risk of corporate dominance here, corporate commercial dominance of this fledgling organization. We have the problem of network solutions, which was given one of history's great windfalls for no reason whatsoever except a lack of public philosophy in our government adhered to by our elected officials.
Thanks for coming. Christopher Ambler from Image Online Design. I'm curious as to what you think the time frame is to sort out some of these issues, specifically coming from the standpoint of a company that has been prohibited from competing with network solutions for going on 4 years now and continuously harmed as a result. When do you anticipate actually seeing real competition being entered into this market?
Well, network solutions, you know, has the best of both worlds, doesn't it? It says we have a contract with the federal government, therefore we're immune from the antitrust. But it's really nice. I think we have about a year. I think about a year to really get this thing going in the right direction, and it's deciding whether we want a different generic structure than ICANN, or so limit ICANN to its plumbing, and limit it very strictly, you know, by clear language and in a arena of accountability and vigilance and oversight. We have about a year.
Okay. I heard that last year and also the year before, but I hope you're right.
Well, the deadline is really when that contract is up.
I heard that also last time the contract was extended.
Then it was 2 years. There will be, shall we say, more formidable opposition to another extension. So do I.
And so do I. My name is Jean Hansen. I am going to ask a clarification in what I see as an internal conflict, or clearly something I'm not understanding. In your simultaneous call for more direct democracy, which I support in the case of ICANN, and the desire for an international government-controlled oversight board, which I see as extremely anti-democratic and very, very likely to corporate takeover. For example, going to Santiago, to me, this is something that would happen even more so in the international delivery community. And although I think that it's corporate takeover is certainly possible with the direct democracy approach, to me, from looking at the institutions of the World Bank and IMF, quite frankly, that these are not consumer-friendly looking at some of what you're saying, and I wonder if you can tell us.
Correct. Very good observation. Those are models to be cautioned.
Do you have a good model of any model buyer?
Well, you know, the idea of global citizen participation is rather new, except in certain rescue populations. We don't have a particularly good model. We need to develop a international model around a global commons point of view, that internet resources are global commons, and work out a new model of democratic accountability. But remember, even with all its warts, you have an internet existing traditional international governance over ICANN. That allows us, for example, to go to Congress and to affect the U.S. government's role supervising ICANN. But if there isn't any such oversight, you can't go through the parliaments or the legislature or hope there'll be a progressive president or chief of state to interfere.
Dan McGuire, Newsbyte. What do you think should be done with, and who do you think ultimately should control the ComNetNord registry that Network Solutions maintains its own? And if it's not Network Solutions, how do you think that should be dealt with by the U.S. government?
Well, first of all, I think there should be a judicial or legislative determination if they don't own it. That's just a claim. It hasn't been authoritatively resolved. But remember, always keep in mind that what we're talking about is to severely narrow the functions of ICANN to the very ministerial purpose. That leaves, of course, a whole area that has to be subjected to new form of governance. And your question would be involved as part of that new arena. Whereas now, if we don't have that narrow boundary, we have this constant expansion over the years as it becomes more and more reflective of the power of the state. And it's ambitious definition of country.
Harry Hoffreiser, I work at CPSR.
I'd like to hear what you would have to say to the whole question of, well, why do we even need an ICANN? We heard just that ICANN is very weak before earlier this year. Before that, we heard some people talking about why technically we really don't even need to have an centralization. Why not take, for example, just in a judicial legislative hearing to say that ComNetNord are not owned by MSI, and then open everything up and forget about ICANN entirely?
Well, I mean, you can forget about ICANN entirely, but you do have to have a traffic cop. Allocation functions, just like you do in the radio frequency. But I think the answer to your question is that this is a global phenomenon. It's going to have global governmental and other input, and you've got to have some sort of governing system globally. Whereas if it was just national, you could say, okay, you know, you don't really need all this stuff. The other thing is that the internet is going to reflect a lot of bad behavior. And so once ICANN, let's say, is restricted to its ministerial purpose, who's going to deal with that? You can't deal with it with primary national jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. That's apparent right now, just in terms of some of the raw stuff, financial fraud and pornography. So there's going to have to be some. You see, for those people who think that governance isn't needed, let me just say this. There is always a form of governance, whether we like it or not. Because as long as there's power, as long as it's organized, as long as it has a thirst for concentration, all of which characterize large commercial interests, they will be the government. So they'll always be government. This is this libertarian ideal. Doesn't exist. It will always be government. The question is, what kind of governance do we want? The governance of big corporations working through an instrument? The governance of political bureaucracies who are prisoners of big corporations? The governance of some sort of commonwealth administering a global commons in a healthy form of accountability and internal competition, etc. If this is a new technology of enormous proportion, we better start thinking new ways of enormous proportion to deal with it. And learn from the past, but not be a prisoner of the past. The projections for internet technology, technologically, are way ahead of the projections of how the uses of this technology are going to play out, and who's going to get harmed, and who's going to help. In other words, like genetic engineering, the genetic engineering is way ahead of the legal and ethical framework that should be keeping up with it. And that's the problem we have here. You go to these giant trade shows, it's all technological projection. You don't have any kind of symmetrical organizational shows that deal with the ethical, legal frameworks, the utilities for... not going to escape governance as long as there are multinational corporations in this world. You're not going to escape governance as long as there are tyrannical governments, too. But this idea that if we just sweep government aside and get rid of it, somehow the free play of merit and the free play of competition will work their will with a few warts here and there is just dreaming in the wind. I mean, the dynamic unity and purpose of the modern corporation has an extremely powerful motivation behind it. It's extremely flexible and adaptive to its singular purpose of maximizing sales and profits. And as such, it does not have the deliberative doubts that citizens have, who have to juggle all kinds of value systems, commercial and non-commercial, which often breed bitter disputes. You don't see serious divisions inside Exxon Corporation about whether to go renewable solar or fossil fuel. There's a tremendous unity of purpose which gives these corporations an enormous and singular power, and because they have one yardstick by which they measure their activity. There will always be governance. The question is, how do we have the best kind of governance?
We'll be breaking for about 5 minutes. I see some new questions from the back.